Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, the great Newt Gingrich joins us to talk about the upcoming midterms and our chances and why he thinks we need to brand the Democrats as weird. Kind of like that. Also, Pedro Gonzalez joins us to talk about why is it that our leaders are infatuated with foreigners, but really are annoyed by our own citizens. You can email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. And subscribe to our podcast. Open up your podcast app and type in Charlie Kirk Show. Make sure that plus sign is selected and get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. I hope to see many of you when I go on tour. So go to tpusa.com/tour. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Very special guest right now who really understands what's going on in America. Mr. Speaker, Newt Gingrich is with us. Mr. Speaker, welcome back to the program.
Oh, it's great to be with you. It's always fun because you do such a great show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that and love your commentary, especially recently. So, Mr. Speaker, it seems as if in the last couple of weeks, things have really turned positive for Republicans going into the midterms. We're 34 days out. It seemed like the Democrats' spending spree over the summer and their kind of synthetic raising of their candidates, it's collapsing all around them. What's your diagnosis heading into November where we stand right now?
Well, we're about where I thought we would be back in the spring when you have this level of a cost of living crisis. You have the price of food going up 13.5% in 1 year. You have the gasoline prices going back up. I paid $5.05 a gallon last Saturday. You have crime in all the big cities. You go to, for example, the race in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Philadelphia just had its 1,000th carjacking of the year, a record, and they still have three more months. 70% of the people in Philadelphia say crime is the biggest problem they've got. Well, that really undermines the Democrats.
Yes.
So you look at those, then you look at immigration, the amount of fentanyl, you realize that 100,000 Americans a year are dying of drug overdose. That's twice the deaths of the entire Vietnam War. And all these things are coming together in a really simple way. It ain't working. Big government socialism isn't working. Joe Biden isn't working. Chuck Schumer isn't working. Nancy Pelosi isn't working. And I discovered yesterday, I was in Des Moines, Cindy Axne, who is the Democratic congresswoman from Des Moines, was supposed to be voting in August. She signed a note saying that because of COVID, she couldn't come. She was actually vacationing in Paris when she was supposed to be voting. So you have all these different swirling things, and that leads me to believe we'll probably be plus 20 to plus 50 in the House and plus 3 to plus 7 in the Senate.
So one of the let's say concerns our audience has that maybe you can help clarify is why is it then with all of the momentum, Democrats are outspending us so significantly? Is it because they've really become the party of the oligarchs? What's your take on that, Mr. Speaker?
Well, I think there are three big things underway. One, Act Blue was founded years before Win Red. So they've had time to build a really large online donor base that's more than twice the size of the Republican donor base.
That's right.
Two, the Republicans, this has been one of the great revolutions of my lifetime. Republicans today overwhelmingly represent people who did not go to four-year colleges. Two-thirds of all Americans went to a vo-tech school or a junior college or just went straight to work. They used to be FDR Democrats. They have now become Trump Republicans. They're also people who have been hit the hardest by inflation. So just the available cash. On the other hand, the Democrats represent the college professors, the trial lawyers, the Hollywood elites, the New York billionaires who've sold out to China. And that collective group has tons of money and they're not affected. And then third, the immediate reaction to the Supreme Court decision on Roe versus Wade,
yes,
triggered on the left a huge surge of donations. And I think that it's finally, I should say, I think they understand that their entire effort to turn America into a weird country is going to go crashing and burning if they lose this fall. And so they see much greater threat than we do. I mean, they understand that, Kevin McCarthy as Speaker, Mitch McConnell as Majority Leader, setting the stage for a 2024 where we take back the White House. That's the end of their world. And I think you're seeing a desperation. Senator Lee, for example, is facing this in Utah, where they will lie. They will, yes, pretend to be things they're not. We just saw this in Georgia, where Senator Warnock may be running the most vicious personal campaign in the country.
Yes.
I mean, they are genuinely desperate.
Yeah, I think that's a very clear analysis. And I love when you say that they want to make America weird. That's right. And I think normal people can relate to that, especially when you hear about black-only dormitories on campuses and affirmative action racial hiring quotas and men can become pregnant and Ketanji Brown Jackson's inability to tell you what a woman is. I just don't think that the average plumber electrician looks at that and says, you know, that's the political party I want to be part of. It's a very, very powerful, but, small group of people that have high earning potential. I suppose that's why they're able to finance these campaigns so generously.
Well, and for them, it's an alternative religion.
Yes.
I think it's important to understand that literally this is a secular religion, and they have the fervor of a brand new religion, the passion of missionaries, the intensity of going after the people, yes, like us who are heretics. I decided a couple of weeks ago when I was reading about an effort to get kindergartners to talk about their gender, it hit me that the word weird is better and more accurate than the word woke. People don't have any idea what woke means, but they understand what weird is. And your point's a good example. We fought for years to end segregation. We fought for years to, yes, get to a colorblind society. And now these people, in a weird way, want to reestablish racism as the national model. You can't have the Bible in a school, but you can have pornography.
Yes.
Because after all, children should be exposed to the many options they have sexually. And it's, again, it's just strange. The weird religion of the left has glorified strange behaviors.
Yes.
At the same time that they have deeply opposed every traditional American value, starting with saluting the flag and saying the Pledge of Allegiance.
That is one of the most concise summaries I've heard of what we're living through right now. Do you have confidence that this Republican leadership group, and I know you've spent a lot of time workshopping with them, are ready to govern and also hold this administration accountable if we take back the House? Because just to be very honest, our audience is very skeptical of Republican leadership because it just seems as if they've been let down by Republican leadership kind of post you being speaker in the 90s.
I think skepticism is legitimate as long as you remember that if you don't elect them, what you get is worse.
That's right. Yes.
But Reagan used to say, trust but verify. I think that's a good rule. I don't trust people with power. I expect that the morning after the Republicans win the House and the Senate, everybody who voted for them ought to say, now deliver. And I like what Kevin McCarthy's done with a commitment to America, which was modeled on our contract, because they put it there in writing. And I think we can hold them to account for that. And I was very delighted when Senator McConnell and Senator Rick Scott both came out and endorsed the concept. And I think it gives us the beginning. But I can tell you, I'm not going to talk with them about how to govern as a congressional majority until they win.
Yes.
I don't want them worrying about next year until we get through this year. And we still have about 35 days of tough campaigning ahead of us.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. And again, I think that finally Republicans are getting on message. I think they're finally understanding what their voters are demanding. And if you just look at it, if you look at it from a fair analysis, what new voter is going to convince, I'm going to vote for a Democrat in the next 30 days. I think they've hit their peak and it is a diminishing return. They know that, where Republicans have a massive ceiling of new voters that they can win over in the next 30 days, people they could persuade, independents. And there was a CNN article yesterday that's a fire alarm for Democrats, which is not the number one. I think you probably saw this article. The number one issue for voters, Republicans lead historically on, which is jobs, right, inflation. Because if you talk to a random independent voter, they might think Republicans are, you know, I don't like their tone and all this, but they know deep down the economy runs better when Republicans are in charge. That by almost a 3-to-1 margin, independents believe that. And so if this economic carnage continues, I think that's going to really benefit Republicans. I want to tell you about one of the most important organizations in the country, created by co-founder of the Home Depot, Bernie Marcus. The folks at Job Creators Network defend and advance policies that help small business owners across America grow their business. We talk a lot about labor in the media, and we're always responding to the complaints of labor, and that's fine. Obviously, it's important, but who actually creates the jobs that labor actually is able to enjoy? Big business has their lobbyists, but small ones don't always have the time or money to defend themselves against the forces of global corporations and their crony capitalist pals in the kingdom of Washington, D.C. Job Creators Network, that's right, Job Creators Network fights for small business owners across America, and they're looking for a few good men and women to join their growing army of small business advocates. They'll train you to be the face and voice of Main Street in your communities and beyond. To learn more, go to jobcreatorsnetwork.com. That is jobcreatorsnetwork.com. Small business is the heartbeat, the backbone, the lifeblood of our economy and the American dream. Learn how you can join this growing army of advocates. Go to jobcreatorsnetwork.com now and hit the red join button. If you are a small business owner, if you're involved, go to jobcreatorsnetwork.com. That is jobcreatorsnetwork.com. Mr. Speaker, I'm going to ask you about something you mentioned in a state you know rather well, the state of Georgia, with one of the most expensive Senate races in history, Raphael Warnock against Herschel Walker. An article came out alleging that Herschel Walker paid for an abortion. He denies those claims, emphatically denies them, and it has kind of turned into this entire media circus as Herschel is surging in the polls, raising a lot of money, and Warnock is becoming increasingly desperate. How should we as conservatives view this race? And some conservatives are saying, I can no longer vote for Herschel Walker based on these accusations of which he denies. How should we look at this?
Well, this is classic. This is exactly what happened to Justice Kavanaugh. It's exactly what happened with Donald Trump and what we now know was a totally dishonest Russian hoax that never existed, was never true.
Yes.
The FBI lied about it. The New York Times lied about it. The Washington Post lied about it. This is a pattern that goes all the way back to Judge Bork when he was nominated for the Supreme Court. So let's be clear. You had an anonymous story in a publication, which then becomes an excuse for other publications, which would never deal with an anonymous source, to quote the story, because the story is not anonymous. It was published, but the source of the story is anonymous. Herschel's been very clear. One, that he did have problems at points in his life. He'd had a number of concussions as a football player. He went through the equivalent of PTSD. When he recovered, he, in fact, went around and gave over 400 speeches,
yes,
on military bases, helping people, helping young people deal with their own challenges. He's been a very big mental health advocate. And Warnock is such a despicable, dishonest, slimy
person.
That's
exactly. He is a despicable person. You're exactly right. Now,
here's a guy, supposedly a pastor, who runs a commercial which has Herschel Walker's former wife saying he pulled a gun on me. They then stop the video. Well, the next part of the video, Herschel's sitting next to her. And they're talking about how at the darkest point in their lives, they found Christ. They found a better future. Life worked better. Now, how can you call yourself a pastor and cut a commitment to Christ in such a way that you only take the negative piece, totally distort what it meant? And that's just typical of Warnock. And I'll tell you what it tells me as a historian. The Democrats know that if this election is decided on the issues, Warnock is gone.
That's
he will
right.
be wiped out. Just as, by the way, you'll notice that Stacey Abrams is now in total collapse and
yes.
free fall.
That's right.
Therefore, if they don't destroy Herschel personally, they can't beat him on the issues. And Herschel, who I happened to talk to the other day, he gets it. Look, I mean, this is a guy who got hit his whole career. He understands. You put on the pads, you get on the field, people hit you. And he is determined. He thinks Georgia needs a senator who genuinely is religious, who genuinely is conservative, and who genuinely cares about the issues. And he's willing to take the beating in order to offer himself as that senator. And I think Georgians are going to look at that and they're going to say, okay, over here I've got this left-wing cuckoo pretending to be a preacher who clearly doesn't behave like a preacher. And over here I've got a guy who is solid, who is a state hero, the greatest athlete ever to play for the University of Georgia. And he is sincere and he's happy and positive.
Yes, that's
and
right.
I think that's a key part.
I totally agree. And, you know, some people I think are so rushing to judgment. I say, guys, have we learned nothing over the last couple of years? Nothing of the smear tactics, of the character assassination, and also not even an inch for redemption or forgiveness or for improvement of the individual. And who is he running up against? I agree. Warnock is despicable.
By the way, you ought to think of it as Charlie Brown in the football.
That's right.
That no matter how often she pulled the football out from away from him, he's still sucking for it every time.
And that is honestly some of the chattering class on the right, Mr. Speaker, drives me nuts when they fall for this stuff. They learn nothing throughout all this. You wrote a piece saying that you think Blake Masters is going to win in Arizona because of the ceiling that Mark Kelly hit. Tell us about that.
Well, look, it's very simple. Kelly goes in and votes no on 13,000 additional border patrol, and 12 hours later votes yes on 87,000 IRS agents. Now, you go to the average Arizonan and say, given all they've suffered from illegal immigration, do you think we need people to protect us or people to investigate us? Mark Kelly's against protecting us.
Yes.
He's for investigating us. Blake Masters wants to protect us. I think that choice is going to become very clear, and I think Kelly's gone.
Very clear. You know, Mr. Speaker, you should give more advice to these candidates because they meander. They're not as clear as you. They got to stay disciplined. I'll tell you what. Mr. Speaker, thank you so much.
Great job. Thank you. Thanks, Charlie.
MyPillow is having their biggest sheet sale of the year. You've all helped build MyPillow into an amazing company that is today. Now Mike Lindell, inventor and CEO, wants to give back exclusively to his listeners. The Percale and Giza Dream Bedsheet sets are available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they are all now for sale for $29.98 with our listener promo code Kirk. Order now because when they're gone, they're gone. The Percale and Giza Dream Sheets are breathable and have a cool, crisp feel. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't miss out on this incredible offer. There is limited supply, so make sure you order now. Call 800-875-0425 now and use promo code Kirk, or go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener square and use promo code Kirk. This offer will not last long, and they're known to sell out quickly, so use promo code Kirk at MyPillow.com. That is MyPillow.com. With us right now is Pedro Gonzalez from Chronicles Magazine. Pedro, welcome back to the program. Pedro, I want to talk about Ukraine and Republicans' continued support of this proxy war without ever able to tell us why it's in our national interest. But first, I want to ask a more philosophical question that I think you can help me with and our audience with. Why is it that America's elites are more interested in what's happening abroad than domestically? What is it? What drives that? What is the urge, the temptation to care more about, let's just say, foreigners than our own citizens? What's behind that?
Well, I think it's important to kind of understand everything that our ruling class does as foreign policy, which is to say that what they want to do abroad is also what they want to do here. So you're right in the sense that it seems like they're neglecting the border, they're neglecting crime and things like that. But in a way, they're not really, in the sense that they're actually getting what they want here and abroad. So I think all of these things are connected. But I think that the threat of a country like Russia is not that Russia is, I think, a real material threat. I mean, the war has shown that Russia is kind of like a second-rate regional power that has difficulty mobilizing its military to handle the challenges that it's facing in Ukraine. So really, apart from its nuclear arsenal, which we seem to be encouraging it to use, Russia really doesn't pose any material threat to the United States. I don't view Russia as a model for what America could be at all. I think that idea is absurd, right? That people like us want the United States to become like a Russia or something like that. That's just not true. But I think the hatred for Russia from our elites stems from the fact that the existence of a country that does not subscribe to the fundamentals of the U.S. regime, of the people that are overseeing it, is a kind of existential threat because it poses the possibility of just an alternative. It may not be a good alternative in Russia's case, but just the fact that there is another way to organize your society, a way that you do not organize your society in such a way that it, you know, it normalizes transgenderism for kids and all of these different crazy things that you're seeing that are actually kind of integral aspects of the existing, you know, globalist American empire.
Yes.
I think that just that, it kind of incenses our elites because we might get ideas as Americans that maybe actually we don't have to live like this. Maybe there's a different way that we could organize our political affairs. And I think that that is ultimately at the heart of the hatred that our ruling class has for, you know, an otherwise, like I said, regional power like Russia that can't really hurt us.
Yeah, and that's a good philosophical answer. Of course, there's a lot of people getting rich off of this too. There's a lot of defense contractors, the war machine. And
yes.
I do find it interesting though, because, you know, under that circumstance, you know, whether it be the kind of nation building in Ukraine and how Russia has a lot of problems, obviously, domestically, and we're not fans of that, but they have been very clear about social conservatism and let's just say the strong family and against transgenderism and all that other nonsense that we see infecting our society. I could see why that would bother the American ruling class and elites. So I want to play a piece of tape here. There's, despite all of the issues that we see happening in Ukraine and kind of how we further get entangled here, it seems as if we're doubling and tripling and quadrupling down. And there's almost a fawning in the American elite, which is I care a lot more about kind of something 5,000 miles away than the only American southern border, which is so interesting to just continue to unpack philosophically. But there is this clip, I don't know if we have it, of the British Prime Minister. Have you seen this? Where she said the only thing we're going to accept is victory in Ukraine, victory in Ukraine, victory in Ukraine. Oh. It's amazing. It's like this repeated incantation over and over and over again. But let me instead play this one here, one that I do know we have. Let's play this one of our media sitting down with the First Lady of Ukraine, showing pictures of Americans with bumper stickers and flags in support of Ukraine. It's an incredible clip. Play cut 46 of Scott Pelley from 60 Minutes.
Are you stronger than you thought you were?
Everyone has become stronger. I'm not unique.
Madam First Lady, may I show you some photographs from the United States?
With pleasure.
This is a picture I took on Fifth Avenue in New York.
Wonderful.
This is a bumper sticker where I buy my groceries. I took this picture on the east side of Manhattan. What do you say to the American people?
It's good journalism, Pedro, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just funny because, you know, like New York is undergoing this crime wave right now. And you literally have people, Americans, that are being killed in the streets of their own communities. But it's fine because you stand with Ukraine and you wear a mask. I mean, it's just, it's so absurd. And like I said, I actually think these things are connected. You ask the question, why do our elites seem to care more about a distant country? Why do they seem to care more about illegal aliens than Americans?
That's exactly
it's right. This kind of obsession with the other, whether the other is this country that we've created this kind of Marvel universe narrative around, Ukraine, or the other in the sense of the illegal aliens that are getting kind of shipped around the country right now, right? We create these myths about the other, and we're told that somehow we have, as Americans, it's our kind of obligation to sacrifice ourselves to the other, whether, again, it's someone who crosses the southern border or this distant country that has no meaningful impact on American life. I think it is at all connected. And I think related to this is the election in Italy, right? I think what you're seeing from the new the new rising star in Italy, Meloni, is that her wager seems to be that I will pledge allegiance, and she might actually really sincerely believe this, but there's another element to this, right? Basically, if I pledge allegiance to the U.S. Foreign policy interest, then I can have kind of social conservatism at home. Italy can do what it wants domestically as long as Italy subscribes to the foreign policy agenda of the United States, which means, you know, full support for NATO, you know, unflinching support for Ukraine. But that's just not true. You know that that's not true. Poland, until recently, for example, was being demonized by liberals in the United States as this kind of regressive country. And although Poland has kind of actually jumped the shark in a lot of ways with its support for Ukraine, you know, it's now talking about welcoming U.S. nuclear arsenal into its territory. Like that's a crazy provocative move. But although Poland is doing that, Poland is still getting punished by the EU, you know, over its refusal to change its laws and its refusal to take in migrants from overseas and stuff. So I think Italians, Meloni, are going to learn really quickly. You can't actually have it both ways. If you pledge allegiance to the U.S. foreign policy interest in Washington, you can't have socially conservative politics at home. The United States government, the State Department, yes, won't allow it.
That's exactly right. So, Pedro, what do you make then? There's this seismic shift happening politically that really has our elites confused. And by no means does this mean should we allowed to continue to have southern porous borders. But Latinos in America, Hispanics, which you're a subject matter expert on, right, Pedro, are becoming radical right-wingers, it seems. And the explanation by kind of normie Republicans as well, it's because of gas prices. Okay, I'm sure that's helpful. But I think it's a cultural issue, isn't it? I think it's about white woke people coming into their communities and saying men can become pregnant and masculinity is a bad thing. What's your take on this, Pedro?
Yeah, I think it's complicated because I think Latinos are not a monolith, right? Like you're just going to see different attitudes among different groups. I think it's certainly true that you're seeing this phenomenon mostly in Tejanos and Latinos in Florida, that you're kind of seeing this turn to the right. But I'm always wary of trying to read too much into it because in our politics, that's just the way things are. It gets used as a kind of excuse to promote more immigration, right? The GOP will welcome this. You know, well, this is proof that these are natural conservatives, and therefore
that's right.
Which is really frustrating because it actually makes it so that it kind of taints our analysis of these things. But I think that's certainly true. I think it's certainly true that it's a kind of reaction to the left going too far, and specifically going too far with regard to the family. I think that you have this kind of willingness to fight among Latinos that white liberals just don't have. When it comes to things like, you know, like for example, this is in the news right now. These major medical associations have asked the DOJ to look into the supposed threat posed by parents and groups who are railing against transgenderism for kids. And I think that it's not just Latinos who are, that's not true at all. It's not just Latinos that are angry about this, but I think there seems to be a kind of like strong familial sense in a lot of Latinos that basically when you threaten the family, whether that's through rioting or yes, transgenderism, you're going to provoke a reaction that's not necessarily ideological. It's more of just like, you know, you have
it's
no
real,
right?
Right? I mean, that's where the left and these, you know, neoconservative, socially liberal people that kind of parachute in, there's communities of people that say, I don't have enough money to not deal in reality. I can't afford your luxury belief. It's out of grasp for me, right?
Yeah.
And Latinos, more so than the blacks in America, seem to really be grasping onto this kind of move to the right. But you're right, Pedro. We have to resist this from becoming a mass amnesty play. Because I could totally see it, where Republicans say, hey, look, now there are people. Let's do this. Hold on a second. You're not understanding the immigration story. You're not understanding all the different implications here. Pedro, what's your take on Twitter and Ben Collins kind of talking about the current censorship regime? I have the tweet here. We can read it, but your thoughts first.
Well, like you said, I think the Elon Twitter saga has always been interesting because of what it reveals. Because like you said, we don't know if Elon is actually going to pull the trigger on this. And we also don't know if it'll bring, you know, meaningful, lasting change to the platform and make it better. But that's kind of secondary to the fact that a lot of things are revealed in just the shakeup of this whole thing. And the most recent example is Ben Collins, who is a reporter for NBC News. His Twitter bio says that he's on the dystopian beat. And I like to say that irony is kind of dead because, you know, irony is when something is set up to kind of deliberately contradict our expectations. But we know exactly, like, it's not a surprising at all. In other words, we expect it when we see a title that says dystopia beat, that this person is not actually covering the machinations of of the dystopian regime, he's actually running cover for them. And so we can expect that from Ben Collins, right? It's just a given, like, okay, well, this guy is just kind of a shill for the system. And so that this thread that he wrote about Elon is really interesting, not because it's surprising, but it's because it's so honest.
Yes.
Basically, he says that if Elon assumes control of Twitter, that he thinks it could very, very likely affect the midterms. That, in other words, changes to how the system does content moderation and all that could affect the outcome of an election. But for that to be true, Twitter has to already have the ability to influence elections. In other words, it already does that.
Which we know they do, and he's admitting
right.
it. And Twitter's yeah. a unique thing. He's admitting it yeah. because, and this is important for some of our listeners that don't spend time on Twitter, because you know, we have some listeners that are in their 60s or 70s that are not on social media all the time. Twitter, it's not about the volume of people, which is not insignificant, but it's kind of the top of the tributary. It is the incubator right. of elite thought. Talk about that, Pedro.
Yeah, no, it is. Twitter is interesting because, like you said, you know, we don't know how many people are actually on it because of the whole question of bots and all that stuff.
But we know who is on it. Yes.
There might be bigger platforms, you know, somewhere else or whatever in terms of like its reach, the general population. But Twitter seems to be a kind of hangout in particular for people that are involved in politics and activism and things like that. So it's interesting because, you know, conservatives will say like, well, the internet is not real life. Twitter is not real life. Well, actually, what happens on Twitter and what is said on Twitter actually does seem to have an outsized That's influence right. on real world outcomes. And so here you have a reporter for NBC News saying the losing control of Twitter could basically make it more difficult for Democrats to win elections. But again, you have to accept that Twitter is already helping Democrats win elections, if that's true. And that's, I think, the most kind of amusing aspect of this is that Collins just comes out and says it. And then, of course, he doubles down on why that's good. Well, why is that good? Well, because the opposite is authoritarianism and, you know, racism and things like that. Because they don't recognize, like kind of going back to the discussion about foreign policy, these people don't recognize in domestic politics any alternative to their preferred policies and outcomes.
Right.
They don't. They just immediately write them off as bigoted, sexist, you know, homophobic,
right.
whatever, authoritarian. And so I think that this is the most interesting thing about the whole Musk saga is what it reveals to us.
I want to play a piece of tape here. Play cut 98, how the liberal media reacted to Elon when the takeover was announced. Play 98. It's delicious.
If you own all of Twitter or Facebook or what have you, you don't have to explain yourself. You don't even have to be transparent. You could secretly ban one party's candidate or all of its candidates, all of its nominees, or you could just secretly turn down the reach of their stuff and turn up the reach of something else, and the rest of us might not even find out about it till after the election. Elon Musk says this is all to help people because he is just a free speech, philosophically clear, open-minded helper.
I don't know. Shadow banning. We wouldn't know anything about that.
It's funny because Ben Collins is saying, yeah, no, we do that already. It's just good when we do it. And it's bad when the other side
exactly
wants to do
right.
it. That's literally what Ben Collins, that's the essence of his thread, which is obviously, you know, the opposite of what that person, that pundit just said. Like, what if somebody does do this?
Yes,
Collins is like,
right.
no, we already do it. It's good, but it's good.
Yes. Pedro Gonzalez from Chronicles Magazine. Great job as always. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.